Hi, my name is Paula Underwater.
Hi, I'm Aquascape Adventure Ryan.
Welcome to Rumblefish.
Your underwater journey. There's the giggles. We cannot start an episode without her giggling. And all I had to do was change the way I said my name and I knew it would throw her off.
And there's
the giggles.
So if you,
you put some of the outtakes in your end of your podcast.
Some of these I just tell her, I'm like, you got to leave in. It's just so much fun to start with giggles and having fun.
Real.
Well, I'm glad you all enjoy my goofiness.
Oh, we all are. It's not just you.
James.
Yes.
Welcome to Rumblefish.
Thank you. It's a massive, massive privilege that I didn't expect.
Do you want to introduce yourself for the lovely people listening to us?
Sure. I'm James Bassett, and I am the Naturescaper.
Welcome to Rumblefish, the Naturescaper.
Thank you very much.
Super excited to have you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, honestly, I'm like stoked. When I told my wife, she was like, really? I said to her the other day, I said, you know that really cool podcast I like always listen to? She was like, yeah. Who's on it now? I was like, me? She was like, sorry. Honestly, I made up.
That's so cool. Well, we're thank you for listening to us and thank you for being a supporter of the podcast. And, you know, we're happy to have you here for sure.
It's a pleasure. It's been so nice listening to so many people I've met on Instagram that I didn't realize that you'd had interviewed, that people I've got to know, which has been lovely. Like even Christine last week, for example.
And it's about to be our 1 year anniversary, actually. What's the date today?
Congratulations.
Yeah, next week. So we have a little something special.
Brilliant. Good.
Yeah. Just a little.
Crazy how fast time flies.
Yeah.
I know.
So, you know the drill. We want to know about your underwater journey from the very beginning. And we want to hear it all.
Okay. So my journey started when I was actually very young. My uncle was hugely into marine tanks. And we're talking, 38 years ago, when I was only 3 or 4. He had a 6-foot marine tank all the way back then, which when I think about it now, how difficult that must have been back then to maintain, which was full of living corals and clownfish and snowflake eels and lobsters. And he had this massive grouper and he honestly had everything in it. And it was just the most stunningly beautiful thing I can ever remember. And apparently I used to just stand there for hours just looking at the different things in there. And that's where my first love of it came from. And that really, when I was younger, I actually wanted to be a marine biologist. And that goes all the way back to that. My first fish tank itself was your classic, really small rubbish fish tank where we had a Blackmore and a fantail goldfish. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly what you talk about every episode of the horrible colored gravel and an airstone and having no idea. And I'm sure they probably didn't last very long, but I can remember my Blackmore vividly. I call it E.T. When I must have been probably maybe 7 or 8 years old, I would guess. And then nothing really up until about 8 years ago.
Okay.
8 years ago, I put a fish tank together for my mother-in-law because I thought it would help her relax a bit. And I really knew nothing even then. I went to the local fish shop. I got some terrible advice, stuffed a load of bits and pieces in it, poured a bottle of beneficial bacteria in, and they told me, yeah, it'd be fine, change the water every 2 or 3 weeks. Didn't give me really any proper advice, and I put some mollies and guppies in there and everything died within a couple of months. And I felt really bad because I didn't understand why. I thought I was doing everything right, and yet they seemed to get sicker and sicker and eventually died. And then that kind of, I felt a bit disheartened after that, really. So nothing really happened for a while, and then COVID hit. My wife and I were chatting during the first COVID lockdown here in the UK, which was in June 2020. And she said, why don't you get your fish tank now? It's a perfect time to start and set one up. You know, we've got time on our hands. So she went and bought me a Jurio 125 litre tank, just a very basic setup. And like I said, I really still knew nothing then. I just put some nice gravel in there, and I had some fake plants in there which at the time I thought looked all right, but it didn't quite seem like it should. So I joined a group on Facebook called Tropical Fish Keeping UK, who taught me how to cycle my tank properly, the difference between soft water and hard water fish, things you should do, shouldn't do. And I'd learned so much from them just in the space of a few weeks. And then they said, please tell me you're not going to use those fake plants. And I was like, well, doesn't everyone? I really knew nothing about planted tanks at all. And they said, okay, join Planted Tank Keeper in UK and have a chat with them. And my mind was blown. And I was like, wow, okay, this is what I'm doing. So I did what everyone does. I jumped on YouTube, started watching tons of videos, but without properly taking it in. And I decided I was going to do a dirted tank as my first ever planted tank, which was a humongous mistake. So I got the soil in there that I capped with some gravel, and it was just, for a month, ammonia, 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 and I couldn't do anything with it. So spoke to the guys on the Facebook group, and they said, no, just start again, get some decent soil. So I bought some tropical soil, and then I had my first low-tech, low-energy tank, and I just had basic bits in there, Java ferns and some moss, some Marimo moss balls, and 53B, all the stuff that's really easy to grow. And it never flourished, but it was good. You know, I was really pleased with it. But looking back now, it's amazing how bad it was. but I'm still very proud of it. But it taught me a lot. Very quickly, I realized I wanted to get into this hobby properly. And then I found very, very cheap a 240-liter tank. So I convinced my wife to let me have that. And then in the January of 21, I set up my first ever high energy scape in the 240 litres. And I had all sorts of problems to begin with, balancing it and horrendous amounts of algae. And I never considered giving up, but it was awful for a few months. But I finally started getting on top of it and working out what the algae was being caused by and how to beat it. And then it became this beautiful tank. It wasn't an expensive tank at all, but I loved it. And that's when I started my Instagram as well, in January of 2020. And then very luckily, just a couple of months after I'd had that tank, one of my friends basically said to me, do you want my Evolution Aqua 1200 tank with sump? And I wanted it, but I didn't think my wife would let me have it. And she said, don't be stupid, say yes.
Oh.
So I only actually had the 240 running from January to June. And then I went straight up to the 1200 Evolution Aqua tank, which is just awesome. The most gorgeous tank ever.
It is beautiful.
And it's just been nonstop since then, of adding new tanks and Pico tanks and puffer tanks. And that's kind of where I've got to now.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that tank that you have behind you. But first, we talked to everyone about it. How was that experience with your first CO2?
Do you know what?
Like getting the tank and all that.
Setting it up was pretty intimidating. You know, that I'm sure everyone can identify with that first time you connect a regulator and you push that plunger down. I'm expecting to wake up with concussion. but it actually was okay. It all went to plan. I literally watched hours and hours and hours of videos from George Farmer, Green Aqua, all the people out there that are helping people into the hobby. I just devoured. So I really actually felt quite confident when I actually got, I was worried about how the plants would do, but the actual setup was intimidating to begin with. But once I had all the bits and I was confident how to put them together, it wasn't too bad. But I think that's purely down to just how much I'd ingested prior to that. I'm one of those people, if I get into something, I really get into something. So I probably spent a lot more time researching than most people potentially would, and I think that probably helped me.
That's such a common trait in people in the hobby, you know. It's like an all or nothing kind of personality. When we get into something, yeah, it's like, give me all the information, I want it all now.
Absolutely.
Is that the tank you did the sideway, like the multiple view?
Yes. So this tank, I make it so you get a really nice view from the side, and it actually works really well when you can look in the side and you've got such a nice view of it coming up from the front. But that came down to, I think it was when I watched the Green Aqua video, they talked about, don't just think about looking at it from the front.
Yeah, I was looking at that video, and I mean, just how crystal clear it was. It almost looked like you put your phone like right in the water. It was just gorgeous.
I've had a lot of people say that to me. It's something I'm thinking about doing, though, is getting an underwater camera to try some different perspectives of photography and video.
That would be really cool.
I've had a couple friends say that you need to do that. I'm like, I want to, but I also spent like an expensive amount of money on like a nice camera to do shoots. Yeah. And it was kind of like what we were talking about before we went live. It's like, I go around and take a 5-second photo and they come out great and people like super like them. And then I spend hours taking photos and then putting them on my computer and editing in it. And I get like 5 likes. I'm like, so why am I spending all this time?
We don't do it for the likes. We don't.
You know, I was just going to say, I've come to the conclusion now that as long as I'm happy with what I post,
exactly,
then it's fine. It's surprising sometimes that something that you, as Ryan said, that you absolutely love and you're super proud of might not do so well. Yeah. And something so simple does incredibly well. But for me now, it's just as long as I'm happy with the content I produce, then that's it.
Exactly. I am totally happy shooting with my iPhone. To me, it looks good. And some people is like, oh, you should, you know, use, because I have a nice camera. And it's like, oh, why don't you use your nice camera? It's like, it takes all the fun out of it for me.
Yeah. I have, see, I really love photography. And I got a pretty decent full frame DSLR just about the same time I set this tank up, I think it was. And I try and do one decent photo shoot a week of all my tanks with my DSLR so that I've got some good content. And I take my time and try and get some really good shots so that I've always got some really high quality photos. And then things I see that interest me during the week, I grab my phone and I'll take a picture.
Yeah.
So I have a try and have a combination. And I try and just split my content between things for the people that are already following me and I know already love the hobby and potentially will understand what I'm trying to do, and stuff that's going to interest people that maybe are going to come into the hobby.
I think that's kind of what I was talking about too, about the likes, because, you know, when I was first starting, that's where I got all my inspiration. And it's like, I want to be able to share something that I really enjoy, whether some people don't like it or not. It's okay. It's completely okay. Cause at the end of the day, I really enjoy it, but I want to be able to share as much as I can to as many people, because, you know, this is kind of the style that I like. I'm a nature jungle kind of guy. I have a couple other tanks, but the majority of my tanks, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And hopefully I can inspire one or two other people to be like, hey, you know, I like that. Maybe I can do something like that.
I fell into the trap. I think a lot of people do. In the first probably 6 to 8 months of being on Instagram, I got totally obsessed with how many followers I had. You know, in my head, it was, if you don't have enough followers, you're obviously not very good. And I got a bit obsessed with it. And then all of a sudden I realized, this is stupid. No. Most, I interact closely with quite a few people on Instagram, and they're the people that are really important, and bringing new people in is really important, but it doesn't matter how quickly or slowly that happens. And funnily enough, once I stopped worrying about that, my follower count went crazy.
Hmm. Yeah, it's true.
I think a lot of people play the system rather than the content as well. I do see people with massive amounts of followers, and you look at the content, and I'm not being cruel, but I'll look at someone's content and I think, that's not a great account. Yeah. And, but you know what I mean?
There are
people with amazing content with not enough followers. And I do think a lot of people are very good at social media and that helps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's unhealthy, but it's kind of easy to get in that, you know, mentality, that unhealthy mentality of like, damn it, why can I, you know, why is my account not growing?
Yeah.
No, I post
but every... I'm very happy now with just, if I get more followers, I'm super pleased with that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But my focus now is on seeing what my friends on Instagram are doing, interacting with them. I've made some such good friends. And then just sharing what I'm doing and my plans for the future.
It's okay. It's all good. We all have fun. You know, I have the same fun with 2,000 followers than I probably would have with 10,000. So,
yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you can always communicate and have a real relationship with so many people. So,
and
that's,
and I've got so many people I interact with regularly now,
mm-hmm.
that it's weird. I've never met them. A lot of them are in different countries and I probably won't ever meet them, but I genuinely think of them as friends now.
Absolutely. 100%. Yep. Yep.
You hit it on the head right there.
And that's what's really important to me, you know, and of course I love the hobby and it feels really good when you get that acknowledgement from the community.
Definitely.
But
yeah.
It also feels really good when you make friendships and you connect with people.
I came to Instagram completely blind as well. I'd never, ever even downloaded the app until I started my account in January 21.
Same.
So I literally was coming in the dark. I didn't, like, for the first 2 months, I didn't even put any hashtags on until my wife said, why aren't you using hashtags?
Same.
I was like, why do I need hashtags? So I really was coming in blind. But I was really surprised how... You hear so many bad things about social media, I was really surprised about how genuinely lovely the aquascaping community is. Yeah. You know, I so rarely have seen anything negative happen in our, I call it a bubble. There seems to be this bubble of probably about 50 to 100 aquascapers around the world that seem to interact. They all seem to interact with each other and they all support each other and they're all full of positivity. And I think in the last 18 months, I can think of two occasions where I've seen something negative. And that's amazing for social media in this day and age.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bad stuff going on. There's some every once in a while, but yeah, it's not relevant and it's not predominant. That it's the opposite actually. That's the norm, and it's just the good vibes and everybody trying to help everybody else and supporting, and yeah, it's a great community.
Yeah,
to be in for sure. So let's go back to your tanks.
Okay.
We were just about to talk about that beautiful tank he had behind him. I know we're on a rumble and we're going to jump up, but I really want to talk about that beautiful tank he had behind
you. So you had the opportunity to get this big tank and you kind of went fingers crossed to your wife and she's like, sure, why not?
Well, she said, don't be stupid, have it. And so I honestly thought, you know, yeah, of course I'd love to have it, but I didn't think she'd be for it at all because it's a lot bigger than even the 240s. Although it's the same length, it's a lot taller. It's a lot, goes a lot further back. And we had to basically rearrange the whole living room to make it work. So she very kindly let me have it. And I actually moved it into the house the day before the second lockdown in the UK, which was quite lucky. One of my neighbours helped me because oh my goodness, it's so heavy. It weighs an absolute ton because it's low iron glass. It's really quite thick as well. So I spent the next 2 or 3 weeks getting it all ready, setting the sump up with my friend's Fraser, who actually gave me the tank, he helped me set all the sump up, and I gradually got the bits and pieces for it, the pump and everything else. He gave me, I don't have the most expensive lights. I've got Fluval Plant 3.0. I've got two of them on top. And when he saw that I only had one, he gave me his other one as well. So he's a very, really lovely guy because it just made such a difference with the light. And then I spent about 2 to 3 weeks scaping it and getting it all ready. And in the meantime, on the other side of the room, I still had my 240 running. So I had all the plants from in there that I then took out and sorted and replanted, got a few more extra plants in as well. And it was kind of good to go pretty quickly, really. I mean, it's matured massively since, but even from day one, it was really heavily planted. I've made quite a few changes since I first started. Like the little island had completely different plants on to begin with. I just needed some other bits to grow out so I could put them in there, but I just put some random stuff in to begin with. But yeah, in general, it just grows and grows and grows and grows.
There's something, and I think you're the perfect person to talk about with, but what's your experience between having a very low tech tank and then having a high tech setup? Because there's a lot of people that are getting started in the hobby. And they're like right away getting the advice of like, oh, you need CO2, you need highlight, you need all these crazy things in their first planted tank. And I don't know if that's the best advice. So in your experience, how necessary or what are the differences that are positive or negative between the one and the other?
I think there's a few things that you need to consider. One of the biggest one is time. Because a low-tech plant is going to grow so much more slowly, it's a lot easier to manage. I mean, I have to cut so much out of this tank every week when I do the maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to factor in things like you have to be really vigilant with a high-tech tank. You have to check your fertilizer all the time. You have to check your CO2 all the time. Now, there's so many things that if you don't do that, I mean, for a perfect example, we've been really busy with things going on over the last few months, and I wasn't watching my CO2. And it ran out, and I reckon it wasn't on for about a week before I realized. And as a result, I got an outbreak of BBA algae, as you would expect, CO2 fluctuation, boom. So if you don't have the time to be maintaining it properly, to be looking after your CO2 and fertilizer levels, you're going to run into problems. And if that is going to be the case, it's not worth it.
Exactly.
You can have an absolutely beautiful low-tech tank that hasn't got CO2, and you'd be really pleased with it.
Absolutely.
So I think but I would also say if someone's thinking about CO2, you need to take your time and make sure you understand what you're doing. Don't just go and buy a regulator and a fire extinguisher and the best fertilizer you can. just really read up on it, understand what that CO2 is going to do and how it's going to do it. And if you understand before you start, like I said, I devoured information about it before I started. So I was really confident in the process. If I'd have gone CO2 straight away, I'd have made such a mess of it. So I wouldn't ever hide away from doing CO2, but don't just think, oh, I'll do CO2. You need to take the time, make sure you've got the best equipment you can. It doesn't have to be new. Loads of my equipment is secondhand, and I'm not ashamed of that. But just get the best you can and take your time and do it right. And if you haven't got the time to pump into like a you know 400 liter tank, takes me at least 2 hours a week to maintain it.
Yeah.
And if you can't have that time, choose something that's simpler because it's still going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like my Peapuffer tank, for example, easy to maintain and it's beautiful. And also, you know, a lot of people don't realize that if you use good soil and you use fertilizer and you have frequent water changes and you have the lights right, you don't need CO2 to have brilliant growth.
Exactly.
You can still have really nice growth and really lush growth. It's just not as fast.
Yeah,
I think it's necessary to give a shout out to low tech tanks, you know, and low tech and high tech. That's such a weird concept, but just like you don't need like all the CO2s and or like all the like $400 lights to have a planted tank.
Definitely not. And even this one, even though this is a high tech tank or high energy tank, I don't have 400 pound lights on there. I've got two secondhand Fluval Plant 3.0s. And yes, granted, I probably can't get the best out of reds, but it's still great.
Of course, it is beautiful. Yeah.
Like I've got three Pico tanks, the Peapuffer tank, this tank, and my contest tank. The contest tank is going to be high energy. And this is obviously high energy. All the rest are low tech, and I love them.
Yeah.
One of the most fun I had was doing an experiment where I did a low tech and a high tech side by side. I ordered the exact same plants. You know, I scape them a little differently, obviously, but I just set them up at the same time and I just let them go. And realistically, at the end run, you're going to get almost the same result. Your colors might be a little off. You might not get as big of a bush as possible, but you're going to have you're almost going to have a little bit more fun with it because you're putting a little bit less effort into it. Because a lot of my high energy tanks, like you were saying, I spend so much time every week having to trim. Those low energy tanks, you can go 3, 4, 5 months sometimes without even having to trim it.
But it's also really rewarding when you get that growth finally from a low tech tank and you think, wow, it's finally coming along.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my first tank was low tech and it took a long time for the plants to get going. But when they did, they really got going.
Yeah.
And it's almost more rewarding in a way because they've taken that time to establish.
Yeah, like when I made the move last year, I moved from my house on the beach to the mountains now, all my tanks were high-tech and I had CO2 in all of them. And when I moved and I tore everything down or gave the tanks away and then I started again, I was like, I'm not going to do CO2 on anything. So none of my tanks have CO2 right now, none of them. They all have really nice lights, but there's no CO2 going on. And do you think that at the end of the day, it's like, oh, I should put CO2 here and there? No, not at all. Whatsoever.
No, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I love this tank as it is, but if I didn't have the money, for example, to make it into a high tech setup, I'd have been quite as happy with it being low energy. As someone coming into the hobby as well, it can be really intimidating because, as you said, most people just assume, well, there's no point really unless I'm going to do high tech, and that means it's going to be loads of money, and it means I'm going to have to learn loads of things, and you don't. You really don't.
Yeah.
Another fun thing you can do too is, I mean, you can also start high tech and then slowly take it away and get rid of the CO2. Mm. I mean, I have a couple tanks that have Monte Carlo that I don't pump CO2 into anymore and they've slowly adapted and it's doing fine. You know, it may not be the brightest of green like Monte Carlo can get, but it's still a very lush carpet and it's a wonderful tank for me. And it was a fun experiment to do.
One of my Pico tanks has got the lushest. I've rescaped it now, but before I rescaped it, it had the lushest carpet of Monte Carlo you would ever imagine. It was really thick, bright. And I did a dry start. I took a few cuttings from another tank, sprinkled them on the aqua soil, left it for 2 weeks and then flooded it. And it just went boom.
Yeah.
So, you know, no CO2, hardly any fertilizer. And it just grew like mad.
And that's a good takeaway too, because, you know, when I tried it too, I had a couple people say, well, where's your CO2? You can't grow Monte Carlo without it. And it's like, you know, some of it is doing research, and two, some of it is just trying new things.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of plants that will actually be able to, you know, they call it a medium category. It doesn't necessarily need it, because there's this persistence out there that you have to have it to grow a certain plant. Well, you know, it's not completely true if you have the right soil, the right fertilizers, like we were talking about.
Yeah. I think sometimes the plant classification system can be misleading for people that are new as well, because there's plants that are listed as easy that really don't do that well unless you do have CO2. And then, as Ryan said, there's plants that are listed as hard or medium category that would do fine in a low-tech tank.
Yeah.
So although I understand why those categories are there, I do think they can sometimes not be that helpful to people that are new, because I certainly was confused by it.
I mean, it's not the best way to do it, but sometimes you just got to, you know, buy a plant and try it. I have unfortunately had to throw away a lot of money killing a plant or something to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, we've talked about it on every podcast. Like, I'll put the same plant in two different tanks and they grow differently or not at all. Yeah. And they'll grow in one and not in the other. And I'm like, I'm using RO. I'm doing the same thing. I'm same water changes. It just didn't go.
How many Cryptocoryne's pink flamingo have we killed like here in between the three of us?
Every single one. I have still yet to keep one.
Yep.
I've tried it once and it literally melted away within days.
It never came back.
Not just melted. The rhizome was slush, everything.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's another lie that you see out online. It's like, oh, creeps will melt, but they will come back. They come back sometimes.
Mine left the building.
Uh-huh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, another example, like my friend Fraser gave me this tank. He's got some of the most beautiful Limnophila aromatica that I've ever seen. He gave me some cuttings. I put it in my tank. I've got one bit that's kind of hanging in there. The rest of it's just died back to nothing. And his just grows like a weed. And mine just doesn't seem to want to do it in this tank.
That happens to me with pearlweed, which I don't know the scientific name right now. But, you know, they call it pearlweed because it grows like a weed. Well, it dies like a weed in my tanks. Yeah. Any tank, like high tech, low tech, low light, high light, CO2, no CO2. I can't.
Yeah, I definitely don't think CO2 is the be all and end all.
No.
It can give you some stunning results. And if you've got the time, I wouldn't say don't do it. But I certainly don't think you ever need to feel you need to do it.
And with these wise words of advice, we're going to go and take a little break and we will back right away. Thank you.
That lotus that you got right there in the center too.
Crazy, isn't it?
That's another one that I kill every time, and I don't know why.
I've only ever had two tiger lotus plants. The first one was in a really, really cheap shrimp tank I had set up in the bedroom for my son, and it just never did anything because it didn't have good soil. It had really cheap soil in there, and it kind of grew, but it was only about 4 inches tall with three tiny leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little runner came off of it. So I took the runner and I put it in this tank when I planted it. And for about 3.5 months, it did nothing. It just sat there in the back corner with these two, three little tiny leaves. And then all of a sudden, I'm having to get rid of 3 or 4 leaves a week.
Yeah.
Because they, I mean, this, can you see the one? I don't know if you can see from there, but there's one that's just gone right up to the surface.
Yeah, I see it.
I did the maintenance on Monday morning this week, and that wasn't even visible in the undergrowth, and it's grown into the surface in 3 days.
Yeah, I bought one of my plants that I really wanted from very beginning was a Tiger Spirals Crypto.
Oh yeah, I killed that so badly.
And I struggled with it for the longest time, and it never completely died off. And I did a redid on the 125, and I probably ended up with 10 or 12 now shoots of it that I've put into like 3 other tanks. Cause I'm like, I'm not getting rid of it. I like this plant too much.
Is that the one you gave me when we first met and I killed Robert.
Yeah, I have given you one, yeah. It's just one of those plants that, you know, it's, I don't know, for some reason it can just...
In my high-tech, high-light, CO2, Amazonia, aqua soil, died miserably.
It's I've got three tiger lotus now, two in my pea puffer tank and one in this tank. And it's really interesting looking at the difference and its growth between high-tech and low-tech, because the growth is beautiful in both. But in this tank, it's a deep red, maroon, really thick, waxy leaves.
Yeah.
And in the low-tech tank, it's really delicate, pinky purple, much thinner, much more frilly leaves. So exactly the same species, and it grows completely different in different conditions, but both equally as beautiful.
Yeah, I love mine. When I had it, when I had the big tank, and I had like one corner full of it, and it was just like this, beautiful, beautiful. I miss some of, you know, now that I only have small tanks, I miss having certain type of plants that, you know, they kind of don't make any sense.
It'd be awesome if there was like a miniature tiger lettuce. It would only grow, you know, like with tiny leaves, but the same as that. So you could use it in pico tanks and things. It'd be awesome.
Huh, might need to pull out Kesselman's book and figure it out. I'm sure there's something. There's that green one. Do you remember that one we got together? On, we ordered from somewhere, Ryan.
Yeah.
But it was green. Like,
I'm trying to remember the name of it. But
something Brasilensis. I can't remember. But I still have that. I still have that one. What is it now? It's somewhere. Can't remember.
So. Quick question for you guys. One thing I meant to ask you. So how did you guys come up with the podcast idea?
That's a fun story.
We just podcasted one day on our own before the podcast. We basically, when we first met, I think we kind of caught up with each other's journey, you know. So I told him and he told me about, you know, our journey in the hobby. And then I was like, well, you know, people would listen to these.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, though, it was on WhatsApp, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was like 30-second like little clips for like an hour and a half listening to hers. And then she's like, okay, now tell me yours. So like halfway through me like sending all these clips, she's like, hold on a second, I got an idea. That's and great. I was like, let's run with it.
And luckily, my husband's a musician, so we had all sorts of microphones and recording interfaces. Brilliant. And so we had all the equipment pretty much, which... Now I'm not using his anymore. Now I have my own equipment. But yeah, that's how it happened. And then we talked about it probably in January or maybe the end of December of 2020. Yeah. And we had our first guest in March 7th, 2020.
It's quite nice the way you actually did that, though, because of the... I say my wife's birthday, she just pointed out March 7th. it's quite nice the way you brought the podcast together, though, because you've continued that easy conversation format. And it worked, like I said, it's the easiest thing to listen to. And I think that's why so many people like it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, both Ryan and I are both very chill people. So I don't think that if we try to script something and have like scripted questions and if we try to do a different format, I don't think it would. First of all, I don't think it would be fun for us.
Yeah,
and I'm a journalist, so I've done plenty of that, and I think this format is just like so much more enjoyable for us, for you, and for the people listening.
Yeah, it's really good.
How we were looking at it too is, you know, we're both not very like scientific. We're not doing the chemistry of our water and all that, and you know, it's not who we are. We enjoy the hobby. We enjoy what we do. We enjoy our own tanks.
Yeah.
But what we found that we love the most is the people that we met online. Yeah, and we just wanted to be able to have a sit down because, like, you know, you and Paul have been going back for a couple weeks now. And it's like, well, we want other people to hear that story because we know it. And, you know, let's put a face behind it and actually just sit down and chat for an hour.
Brilliant. And I don't know if you guys are like me. I'm very geeky when it comes to the equipment. But when it comes to the plants... 3/4 of those plants, I have no idea what they're called.
See, that's where I come in. I know all the names of all the plants.
Describe them to you so that you'd know what they were. But there's like Cryptocrinum, and then there's that one there, which is nice. But I can't remember what they're called, but I know them to recognize them instantly if someone else has got them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when it comes to plants, that's one of the things I am determined to improve on this year is my recognition of proper plant names. to match, like, the kit. I can name probably most of the kit I haven't even got, but yeah, plants, I'm terrible.
Yeah, Paula will always ask me, like, and she'll say the Latin name, hey, do you have blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, I'm 5 years old. Treat me like a 5 year old. Can you put it in like the, you know, boost plant, normal, just
cute name instead of instead of the fancy name. Yeah, and we mentioned this before too. Now at this point, that's why this hobby, it's so, so awesome, because it has so many parts that you can just decide to geek on. Like, you can geek on equipment, and you can know about know everything about par on your lights, and like, which I don't even know what par is. But then you can be a geek of plants, like it's my case, and I will know all the scientific names and all the varieties. And then there's Ryan. Ryan loves his fish and aquascaping, and he, at this point, I don't think I'm an aquascaper. I just like the plants, so I will arrange them. And
the actual building of an aquascape, I think, is my favorite part.
See, I don't enjoy that so much.
I love that. I could just like. I could, if I had the space, I'd have a tank that I'd just scape and scape and scape and never plant. Don't get me wrong, I absolutely love it when it's planted, and the planting I enjoy as well. And learning which plants go best in what positions has been a really nice journey. But putting that scape together and seeing it come along and take pictures of it as you build it up, and then you get to that final one, like my competition tank, it's like nothing I've ever done before. Completely, completely different. It's all rock. It's completely out of my comfort zone, and I'm really proud of it. I've had aquascape and Rhino. He's given me lots of feedback, and we've had lots of conversations whilst I was doing it, and without telling me at any point what to do, he's given me the insight to think about what I'm doing, and I'm really pleased with how it's come out. I'll send you guys a picture of it. I can't remember if I have or not. I don't think I have, but obviously it's not on my Instagram at the moment. But yeah, it's nothing like it. I'm in love with wood. I love, love, love wood. And I deliberately chose to do something completely out of my comfort zone. And I was a bit daunted initially, and it looked very basic. And I just, for a long time, I was twiddling. And then all of a sudden, Ryan said, just look at angles. Think about the angles. And as soon as he said that, light bulb, mm-hmm. and the whole thing changed overnight.
Yeah, I realized that what I enjoy the most is when the tanks establish and the plants are all like, full potential and just being beautiful. I enjoy that the most.
Yeah.
And I'm falling back in love with fish. Like, for a long time, it was like all about plants and I don't care about the fish. And now that I have smaller tanks and smaller fish, I'm kind of falling back into love with fish, with the little teeny tiny fishies and my samurai gouramis. And I'm enjoying, it's funny because I'm enjoying the hobby in a total different way now that I'm low tech, small format.
I've definitely started thinking a lot more about the relationship between my aquascaping and the fish I'm going to be using. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be rescaping the 1200 in the summer, and I'm going to be putting an awful lot more thought into what I'm actually going to put into it.
I go on hikes all the time around here, and because, you know, this is Southern California, everything is very dry, so all our creeks are all dry 75% of the year. And I have all these cool pictures of dry creeks, and you know, with boulders and river rocks, and I'm always like wanting to recreate it, but again, I just don't enjoy hardscape anymore, or I don't know if I've ever enjoyed it. I don't think I've ever enjoyed the hardscaping. So I'm like, meh, you know, I kind of want to do it, and it would be really cool, but at the same time, it's like, I wish somebody could just come and do it for me. Like, here, this is the picture, please. Thank you.
See, that's another great thing about the hobby. There's so many facets of it that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
That's definitely me. That's why I tear down tanks so much. It's not because I didn't like what came out. It's just I enjoy. And it's the hardest work, too, because you're starting a new tank. That's the hardest job.
Yeah.
So I found this little balance of letting a tank run for 6 or 8 months. And I mean, it also helps that I have 14 tanks. But
looking forward to the summer, I've just received 30 kilograms of this Frodo stone.
I was going to say. Is that Frodo? That's cool.
What I'm going to be using in the new scape. I haven't even had a chance to take it outside yet.
How much did you guys pay for Frodo stone over there?
30 kilos of Frodo stone will cost you about £240.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
Here it's just so expensive.
Really? I thought that was ludicrous.
Oh no, it's silly here because we don't have it here. So everything has to be shipped. So I mean, it makes it even worse.
£8 a kilo over here.
Here it's like 14 pounds. I mean, not pounds, wow. Dollars a kilo. No, a kilo, a pound. Pounds less than a kilo, right? I don't know.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Paula. I don't know my measurements. Yeah. I never know.
We need to set up these Zoom calls with the little like math charts on the side because we talk about it all the time.
I just recently started having more contact with hobbyists in Spain, you know, which is where I am from. Yeah. And for the longest time, I would only just like do the Anglophone country. So I would speak with people in English and most likely use pounds and gallons and stuff like that. And now that I'm speaking with more people in Spain and everything is like centimeters and liters, I'm at a total loss. Honestly, I have no idea. And it's so sad.
I'm always trying to work out the conversion between US gallons and liters.
It's just not easy. There's no easy way. Anyways, we say this like every other episode. But it's.
I bet you it's easier than we think. We've just never put the energy into it.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you it's a.
That must be you. Talk for yourself. No, you know, I think I have it under control, and then like the next week I've forgotten it all. So I swear I try. But it's okay. Luckily, the names of the tanks, they kind of help. You know, if you have a 60p, I know what that is. I might not know how many liters is that, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So that helps a lot in terms of dimensions, at least. Yeah. So what's next? What's next for you? You were talking about that Frodo stone that you get. What's the plan?
Yeah. So end of the summer. So next, like super. Short term is next weekend. I'm planting my competition tank, which is going to be exciting. I need to plant it pretty heavily because we've only got 2 or 3 months, I think, till the end of the entry date.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the very next thing. And then other projects are rescape the 1200, probably at the end of the summer when Katie will let me do it. Mm-hmm. And I've got a battle because we've got a Pleco that we have to keep because it's my son's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get my friend who gave me this tank to babysit the Pleco for me. And there's some other fish that Katie potentially wants to keep, which I don't want to.
would she want to come in for a second and talk to us?
She's far too shy. She wants to keep the Corys we've got. And I love Corys. Oh, yeah. But they're so destructive with any type of carpeting or low down plant, and I want to have some carpeting plants in the new scape. So we've got a conversation or two to have.
I would love to have her come in here if she wants to come in for like a couple minutes and tell us her side of the story.
She's just at Katie, can you talk at least? she's just popped her jammies on because he's just
it's all right, it's fine.
So IAPL seed tank, then rescape the 1200. I've got a new Pico tank I need to build and get planted at some point. And then I've got some quite exciting projects happening, which I can't really tell you on air, but I'll tell you about after.
Okay.
Looking forward to that chat.
Yeah.
I love the off-the-record conversations. Those are the best.
Yeah, I have quite a few tanks with Corys that I absolutely love. I know Paula loves them too.
They're so funny as fish.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. And I mean, I love them too because, you know, in one, my big tank, I've got, you know, Corys on the bottom and they're spawning like crazy. So I've got babies and full Corys. And then, you know, I've got the middle layers with some angels and tetras. And I can't think of what I've got, but I've also got like some topwater fish. So it's really cool just to watch the whole dynamic in that tank.
Yeah, I've tried to do the same because I've got panda and bronze corys at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got the rainbow fish, and then I've got the harlequins, and then I've got the grumpy old pleco, who's really quite mm-hmm. funny. And I've got one honey grammy I've had since the very first weeks I had my first low-tech tank that's still with me that hides and you hardly ever see it.
I love honey gouramis. I think that, I mean, I love gouramis in general, but honey gouramis, they have a special place in my heart for sure. They're really cute and they're like so subtle. Like their coloring is just so elegant.
They just glide as well.
Something distinguished about them. I just posted a picture of
the pygmy
Cory. Yeah, like a few hours ago. That. That's the only quarries I have right now. When I started in the hobby, when I started getting into planted tanks and stuff, not even aquascaping, I had some, like those green ones, the emerald.
Oh, yeah.
Emerald green quarries. I had some of them, and I ended up giving them away because it was a 10-gallon, and that was one of those purchases that you do when you're starting and you're not making the best choices. But, you know, I gave them away to a friend, to somebody that ended up becoming a friend of mine, to Edgar. Made a post on Facebook as like, hey, I need to rehome these guys. And then he showed up and took them, and we've been friends ever since. So that's really cool.
Well, I mean, talking of friends and making friends in that way, this tank I got from Fraser, he put a post up on the fish keeping group on Facebook saying, I've got two pots of Monte Carlo and I live in this area. Would anyone like some? He was just down the road from me and I was like, oh, I'd love to grab them if I could. And we've become really firm friends.
Yeah, happens just like that. That's crazy. Yeah, but the pygmy quarries are really, really cute. I don't think mine are going to breed in there at all. And even if they do, there's all the tetras. There's the Axel Rhodia Rizzii, the ruby tetras, which are like little piranhas. So I don't think nobody would survive in there. I don't even think the shrimplets are making it. I have like 10 red reels in there, and I haven't seen a baby in like the whole time I've had them. So I'm sure the tetras are taking care of it.
Yeah, but you would also be surprised. They'll find a good hiding spot, and if they're uncomfortable, they'll just stay there forever.
The same thing with the cube. I have 10 CPDs in there, and Ride the Escape guy gave me a bunch of Bloody Marys, and they're breeding like crazy. And the CPDs are notorious shrimp eaters. Yeah. But there's enough plants in there that some are making it. And, you know, the colony is growing. It's not growing super fast. It's not that I'm going to make any money out of it, which I don't need to. And it's beautiful, like seeing them both together, like the way they contrast, the really red of the Bloody Marys and the CPDs, like with flashing the red. I love that little tank.
In here, I've probably got 200 or 300 cherry shrimp, and the rainbow fish just destroy them. But this, as Ryan was saying, there's so much undergrowth where they can live peacefully that they're never going to be devoured because they're reproducing at the same rate they're getting eaten.
Exactly. So it's all reaching a balance. And people, you know, often they would tell you, like, oh, you can keep shrimp with this and that. You can keep shrimp if you're planning on like breeding shrimp like crazy, but if you just want to have some shrimp in there, sure you can.
And if you've got the right habitat, everything survives and it works together.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm in my black water. I have a bumblebee gobbies, which are big mouth fish. And again, everything you read online and everything you talk at the fish store is like, oh no, you can keep shrimp with these guys because they will eat any shrimp, no matter the size, because they have they're small fish, but they have big mouths.
Yeah.
And I tore down the little shallow. I just threw all the shrimp that were in there into the black water, and they're doing fine. It's been a month at least right now, and they're all doing fantastic. They might not be breeding, that I know, but
it's the same issue that people have with betas and shrimp. I mean, people say you can't do it, but I've been able to do it, and I've seen other people do it. Mm-hmm.
It's full of cherry shrimp.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other one.
I have so many people message me saying, you can't do that. And I'm saying, well, I've had them in there since day one.
Watch
me.
Yeah.
They actually interact with each other a lot. Nudging each other out of the way. They don't attack each other. It's really crazy. And I got my pea puffers really young. And I don't know whether it's because they've grown up next to these shrimp that they don't see. I don't know what it is. They just don't eat them.
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah. We definitely need to one day see, because I love these, make a debunking episode.
Oh, yeah.
Debunking aquarium hobby myths that are not true necessarily.
And debunk the idea that we're not fish or plant geeks as well, because my wife just calls me the fish or plant geek now.
We just really enjoy having a hobby just like everyone else.
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
I mean, for me, it's great because our son is 13 and he's autistic, and he loves the tank. Mm. And he's got tanks in his bedroom now, and they really help him calm down. And I actually did a project in the last 6 months for my son's school. So they've got a tank about to go there for their therapy area, which I've created for them. Just a very basic, low-tech shrimp tank with loads of Java ferns and Anubias and things like that in there. So that it can help the kids at the school as well, because Evan goes to a special school for autistic children.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a chill out area for when the kids get wound up or if they get overstimulated, mm-hmm. they can just go there and relax. And the tank's going to be right there for them to help them calm down.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, so many therapeutic uses, or not uses, but just like properties of fish keeping and aquariums.
Definitely.
That's really interesting. Ryan and I, we both have anxiety issues, and we know how calming.
Yeah, and Katie does, you know, she just put her hand up as soon as you said that. And I often, even when you're watching television sometimes, we've got the, you know, big 55-inch TV, and then we've got a 120-centimeter aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing the amount of times your head gradually turns around and I'm looking at the fish tank and not the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that a lot too. I just sit down here. We don't have a TV in the living room, but I sit down here with my computer and like watching something, and I'm like just not watching at all. Especially at night when everything gets dark and there's only that light on.
Like the people have a time. Katie loves it in the bedroom. You know, we all interact with it every night before bed. My son, my wife and I, we always go and speak to the peepuffers, and they all come up to the glass to greet us. And it's like a family thing almost, you know, they know to come and say hi to us. And it's an end of the day thing that we do together.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's the first thing when I get up every day. What I do is just come and check on my, like, now I have some newish fish. So the first thing I do in the morning, it's come, you know, get up, go to the black water and count my samurai gouramis. Make sure they're all still there.
She does that every night. She's like, one, two, three. Where's the other one? Oh, there you are.
Bob, where are you, Bob?
She's named all of them, and she knows all their little quirks. Oh, no, he hasn't had enough bloodworm. Come on, he's got to have some more.
I know. I know. That sounds like she's quite the sport, so that's good.
Yeah, she is. She's great. And you know, like I said, you know, I wouldn't have this tank behind me if it wasn't for Katie. So, awesome. And I wouldn't have had my first tank. She's the one who prompted me to go and get my tank.
Thank you, Katie.
So, yeah, exactly. Thank you, darling.
Yeah, it's so important to have a supportive partner, because it's a hobby that is very time consuming and very space consuming.
Yeah.
I have the tanks, and then I have my other plant obsession. So between the plants and the tanks, it's like the living room is mine. Like. My husband is like, oh, I would like to have the stereo out here in the living room and just get some nice speakers. And I'm like, that's no room. I'm sorry.
I was literally just talking to Katie this afternoon about potentially having a new shed and making it my outdoor fish room so that I wouldn't have to keep.
I love
the idea. Yeah. That's so
cool. I wouldn't have to keep having extra fish tanks in the house, but, you know, like MD Fish Tanks had. So that's potentially something that might happen later this year as well.
No, it will happen.
Cool. Well, that was a really nice chat, James. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, it's a pleasure. It's been fun. It's been really nice to speak to you guys and, you know, just chew the fat about a hobby we all love, rather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. We wish you the best on your contest entry. We'll keep track of it. And yeah.
I think the next one we have to have a sit down with Katie.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. That would be quite funny, because I mean, literally all my wife do 24 hours a day is take the mickey out of each other. And we are the most sarcastic people. And our son, our 13-year-old autistic son, has got the most incredible sense of humor, sarcastic sense of humor. So if you've got the three of us together, it's like some kind of dodgy fly on the wall sitcom. Constantly taking the mickey out of each other.
That's great.
That's how I am when I get together with my sister. That's cool. That's a really cool dynamic to have with people you love, for sure.
Thank you so much for spending the last hour with us. I mean, I know we've been chatting for a little bit now, but being able to put the face to the account and being able to just chat, it's been wonderful. So thank you.
And again, if you don't follow James yet.
I am the Nature Scaper. So that's the_nature_scaper. On Instagram, and it'd be great if you ever want to ask any questions, just drop on in and say hi, because I always try and answer people. And thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been a real pleasure and really fun.
Thank you. You have a good night.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Speak to you soon, guys.
Bye.
Bye, James.